We are holding on Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph, sixth line from the top. We learned yesterday about the Mishnah had talked about the Chavite Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Mincha that the Kohen Gadol brings every morning. What happens when the Kohen Gadol passes away? So we had two opinions in the Mishnah. One is that there was a Tanai based in that the Tzibur continues bringing it out of their own funds. The other opinion of Yehuda says is that the Yorshim are obligated to bring it. The Kohen Gadol's heirs are obligated to bring it. If one of them is appointed Kohen Gadol, then of course he's going to start bringing it on his own behalf, but otherwise he still continues to bring it on behalf of his father until a new Kohen Gadol is appointed. Yesterday I'd mentioned there was a sicha in Chelech HaBeis where the Rebbe talks about these different opinions, and also you have the Rashi versus the Rambam, how they understand the mechanism of this. And one idea that comes out of that sicha then is that the Tanakama of the Mishnah, who we said in the Gemara as Reb Shimon, would hold that the Minchas Chavitin is fundamentally a korban sibur, and we say sibur ain't a mess. Sibur as a whole never dies. The Jewish people always continue to exist. The Gemara yesterday, in fact, expressed that idea according to one Girsa in the Gemara with the expression Misha Bris Krusaloi, that the Minchas Chavitin is on behalf of the Jewish people with whom Hashem has a covenant that they will always continue to exist. So therefore, it has to keep on being brought even when there's no Kohen Gadol. The other way of looking at it, Rabbi Huda's way, who says that the Yerushim have to bring it, so the Rebbe ends up explaining that what it is according to that, the Mishicha, the fact that he was anointed, is not just a one-time thing, it's an ongoing thing, which therefore creates a new requirement every day to bring that mincha, and therefore even after he passes away, that still continues until a new Kohen Gadol is appointed. The Gemara had ended up saying yesterday that according to Reb Shimon, what it was is there were several stages in it. The original thing in Torah is that it does come from the Tzibur. Then eventually they made a takana that it comes from the Truma Salishka. Argument, there's different Gersaris in the Gemara that we had. One of them is that one of them is that originally it was meant to be that they'd make a special collection for the purpose, and later on when they saw that people don't want to contribute towards that special collection, then they said it comes from Truma Salishka. The other version of the answer in the Gemara, which also fits with what the Bavli says on it in Menachos, is originally it was supposed to come from the Tzibur. Then there came a point when there's a lot of Kohenim Gedolim. We know during the second Beis Mikdash they had a period when the Kohenim Gedolim are dying every year, so it was ending up being a major strain on the Lishka. Therefore, instead, they made the Takana that the Yoshim should bring it. Again, this is according to Reb Shimon, who says that, not according to Reb Yehuda, who says, Minatoda, the Yoshim bring it. But then the Yoshim were getting careless and saying, why should we bother just because our father was the Kohen Gadol? So the Chachamim restored it to what it was before, that it comes from Trumas HaLishka. All right, so this is where we're holding, six lines from the top of Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yosi tells us that Rabbi Yochanan asked the question when we now the Mishnah had used the expression Ushlema Hoisa Kreva, that when there's no living Kohen Gadol before the new one is appointed, then we said the Minchas Chavitin is brought whole, meaning the regular Minchas Chavitin, when the Kohen Gadol brings it every day and is makriv of it himself, is half of it is brought in the morning, half the Isarin in the morning, and half the Isarin in the afternoon. Now when we say that it's Shlema, what does that mean? Shlema B'Shachos or Shlema Ben Ha'abayim? Does it mean that we're bringing a fully Isarin in the morning and another fully sodden in the afternoon? Oh, shleima b'shachos of Taylor ben Abayim. Or does it mean that they brought a holy sodden doing in the morning and nothing in the afternoon? In other words, is it that the total amount brought for the day when there's no Kohen Gadol is still an sodden, but the difference is, this is according to the second possibility, the difference is that when there's a living Kohen Gadol, then it's brought half and half, and when there's none, then it's brought all at once? Or is it that when there's a living Kohen Gadol, then you have one Isarin throughout the day, and when there's no living Kohen Gadol, then you have two Isarinis, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. And the Gemara comments, Kadhei Pshitale. Now, if you're going to answer that would be like the Bavli's equivalent for that expression would be Imtim Tzoloimar. So Imtim Tzoloimar, if you're going to want to say, Kadhei Pshitale, if you're going to answer, Dichtiv Minchas Tomid, that the answer would be, since the Pasuk calls it a perpetual mincha, a constant mincha, then it means that it has to be like the Korban Tomid, brought twice a day. Well, then, which would mean, in other words, in this case, that, and again, since the Mishnah is telling us that you bring it shlema, that you bring it complete, then it would mean one isodon in the morning and another isodon in the afternoon. Well, if we answer it that way, then shloshes logan mahein, then what would be the din as far as the amount of oil that's supposed to go with it? Now, the way it worked was usually a korban mincha, an isodon, usually has one log of oil in it. But here, the chavite kohen gadol was special. It had three logim of oil mixed in with the one isar and a flour. So it was three times as oily as a regular korban mincha. So now, if we're saying that you bring one isar in the morning and one in the afternoon, what about the three logim? Now, we learned the Gemara previously had mentioned on the previous Amud how b'chlal we know that when there's no Kohen Gadol, then the Minchas Chavitin is brought complete, as one complete Isorin, rather than two half Isorinim, but that limud was only as far as the flour. So does that also apply to the oil then? Does that mean that Shloshes Logan Shachas or Shloshes Logan Ben Habayim, that the oil is also doubled? When you bring a full Isorin in the morning, then you're mixing it with the full three Logan of oil, and then the other Isorin in the afternoon, same thing. Is that how it works? Oh, Logan Mechza Shachas, Logan Mechza Ben Habayim. Or is it that you have a Logan and a half in the morning and another Logan and a half in the afternoon? In other words, are we maybe doubling the flour, but not doubling the oil? So the Gemara continues. Omer of Chispia. Amar Rav Chizkiya, uf hodat tzrichalei. Rav Chizkiya says, as a matter of fact, we also have another question. We should ask not just about the oil, we should ask about the levoina that comes with it as well. Like most korbanos mincha, the chavite kohen gadol comes with flour and oil. Okay, we're saying it's more oil than usual. And it also comes with levoina. It comes with a handful of levoina, which is supposed to be half in the morning, half in the evening. So again, the question would be, shnei kumtzin mahen. So again, if we're saying that you need two kumtzin, so what would it be? Shnei kumtzin b'shachos or shnei kumtzin bein habayim? Would it be that since we're doubling the size of the korban, then therefore we have two handfuls of levoina in the morning and another two in the afternoon? Or would it be that we only have one kometz per, the same way, at the, or do we say that we only have, fine, the usual proportion is a half a kometz for a half an isodin, meaning we start with one kometz and divide it in half. So therefore here where we're bringing the whole isodin together, maybe we bring the whole kometz together. So we have to ask about everything. We have to ask about the flour and about the, so the flour maybe we can answer on the basis of the pasuk, but we still have to ask about the oil, and Rav Chizkiya adds, we also have to ask about the levoin. So Rav Yosef says, at least as far as the kometz, we should be able to answer the question. After all, where do we learn that there has to be a kometz of levoina in the first place? We learned a few days ago. We said that if a person makes a nedava and says, I'm going to bring levoina to the Beis Mikdash, then he has to bring at least a kometz, at least a handful. Ultimately, where did we learn that out? From Minchas Chote, from the case where a person's bringing a mincha as a korban olav yored because he can't afford birds and he can't afford an animal. Now there you don't have levoina. And in fact, the pasuk says that a minchas chayte doesn't contain oil and it doesn't contain levoina. Nevertheless, though, you have a kometz in there, and the pasuk specifically mentions over there that you have, specifically mentions that you have a kometz of the mincha. Ultimately, from that, ultimately we learn from that to other places because there it calls it askara, and the levoina is also called askara. So ultimately, we use that as the basis for saying that any time you have something which is brought as an askara, as so to speak, like the memorial portion of the korban, then it has to be a kometz. So therefore, ultimately, we're learning from there. Well, malahalan shnei kometzin, afkan shnei kometzin. Well, when it comes to a mincha, then you have two kometzin. So the same thing over here, it should be two kometzin. Now, what does that mean? Where do you have two kometzin by a mincha? So first of all, a couple of things. Korban Eda explains like this. Bechlau, you have a machloikas in the Bavli in Menachos has a machloikas. is it that there's an opinion over there, Abba Yossi ben Gustoy, who says that you have one whole, who says that you start out with two koimtin and you have one koimtin in the morning and one in the afternoon. So now the question is, again, do you have two koimtin each time? Whereas according to the Chacham over there, who say that you only have a half koimtin in the morning and a half koimtin in the afternoon. So according to that, there'd be no reason to ask about the koimtin. Obviously, you only have, there's no reason to have more than one every time. But then the answer is like this. Korban Eidah explains. We have like this. A person can bring, a mincha that a person is required to bring is always going to be a certain size. A mincha schoiter, for example, is always going to be any sorin, no more, no less. A mincha of the Kohen Gadol, the mincha schavitin also is always going to be any sorin, no more, no less. But a person can also bring a voluntary Korban Mincha, and now you have a machloikas in the Mishnayas and Menachas. In that case, if a person, let's say, brings a mincha of two esroinim, do you do two lugim of oil with it, or maybe only one lug? It's machloikas over there. Now, Rabbi Yosef in the Gemara over here, or Rabbi Chizkiya rather in the Gemara over here, is Rabbi Yosef is attempting to answer. So he's saying like this. He holds that if you have a larger mincha, it also comes with a larger amount of levoina. Every isarin, according to him, has to have not only one log of oil, but also another koimetz of levoina. The Mishnah tells us in Menachos, the largest mincha that a person is allowed to bring lahalacha in one keli is 60 esroinim. So according to Rabbi Yosef, then, if a person is bringing a mincha of 60 esroinim, then there would be 60 esroinim, 60 log of oil, and 60 handfuls of levoina. So the same thing over here, Rabbi Yosef is saying, since you have double as much flour, because you're bringing a whole isarin at a time instead of a half, then you have to bring double as much levoina. But the Gemara says, Ma taman tzrichalei af hocha tzrichalei. No, because the truth is, why are you assuming as a given that you need to double the koinsim? Really, you should have the same question when it comes to a large mincha. Do you, in fact, why are you taking it as a given that you need an extra koimetz of levoina for everyone? Maybe not. And if you don't prove from there, then and if that's not a valid proof, then you don't have a proof for the chavite koin gadol. That's one way of understanding the Gemara. Then there's a different girsa over here based on Agoris Agra, and which Tiklan Chadatin follows, is again, Rabbi Yossi is trying to answer the question. He's saying, according to this girsa, he says, we're not learning from the Minchas Choyte, we're learning from the Lechem Aponim, where the Lechem Aponim came with two spoonfuls of Levoina, each spoonful being one handful, one koimetz in size. So then, on the face of it, just like we have two koimetzim over there, so here we should also have to have two koimetzim. And he takes out the matamon tzrichalei afachot tzrichalei. He says no, it's a valid answer. In other words, that we are in fact saying that you need two koins in that case for when the koin gadol has passed away and the minchas chavitin is being brought whole. Okay, now what about the lugim? Let's go back to that. Amar Rabbi Chizkiya, klum lamdu shloishes lugin loy mitamon chaben habayim. After all, let's go back and answer the answer as far as the oil. You're wondering whether you need three lugim for each half of the day, or whether you need three lugim for the whole thing, and then which would be half as much as you use for a regular chavite koin gadol, and then you have one and a half lugim of oil in the morning, one and a half in the afternoon. But Rabbi Chizkiya says, after all, where are we learning three lugim? Loi mitamid chaben habayim. We're learning it from the korban tamid, where the pasuk says that the korban tamid we say every day in davening comes with comes with Asir Sa'efer Solus the Mincha, Blola B'Shem and Kosis Revi'a Sahin is three logim. From there we learn, since the Chavite Kohen Gadol are called a Korban Tamid as well, then therefore we learn that you have three logim with it as well. Well, Malahal and Shloshes Logim, Afkan Shloshes Logim. So the same way as over there, you have three logim. The same way over here, and three logim per Isarin. The same way over here, you have three logim per Isarin, as you would have usually by Minchas Nesachim, which is, again, more than what you would have by a regular standalone Mincha, but this is the standard for the Kohen Gadol's Mincha. So yes, if you're bringing a full Isaron in the morning, that means you need three Lugim with it, and you're bringing another Isaron in the afternoon, then it also means that you'd have to have three Lugim with it. But again, the Gemara says not necessarily. Not necessarily, because the truth is, you could have the same question as far as the Talmud as well. Suppose that for whatever reason, you didn't bring the Minchas Nesachim of the Talmud in the morning. Suppose that you're bringing it in the afternoon. And we know that you're allowed to bring the Nesachim separately. Would you in fact need three Lugim separately for each one or not? That's Korban Eidah's first explanation, and his second explanation is that Reb Chizkiya is saying if the question you have to consider Reb Yochanan only asked about the size of the mincha, whether it's a fully sodden in the morning and whether it's a fully sodden in the morning and another full one in the afternoon, or whether it's a fully sodden in the morning and nothing in the afternoon. The very fact that Reb Yochanan did not ask about the koymets or about the lugim, shouldn't that show that shouldn't we be learning? Isn't it obvious that we should be learning everything from the Talmud? If nevertheless Reb Yochanan asked about the three lugim, then obviously that means that just because we find that we may find an exception by that, so maybe there's an exception as far as the koimtim as well. Korban Eidah prefers the first explanation. Lamaisa, the Rambam paskins that when it comes to these chavite kohen gadol, if the kohen gadol has passed away, we do double the amount of flour, because the Gemara did say an imtim tzoloimar on it, or in the Yoshami's lashon kad have a pshitale, kad te pshitale. But the Rambam paskins that the oil and the levoina are not doubled, because after all, the Gemara didn't conclude over here that they are. We said in the Mishnah, Shaloy Yechula, another takana of Beis Din was that Mi'ila should not apply to the ashes of the Parah Adumah. So the Gemara says, the Din Hoya Sheyim Aluba. Really, that implies, in other words, that if we're saying you need a takana, you need a Tanai Beis Din, that implies that Daraisa Mi'ila would apply to it. Behein Gozru Shaloyim Aluba. And we're saying that the Chachamim made it Zeder, the Chachamim made a takana, that Mi'ila wouldn't apply to the ashes of the Parah Adumah. But the question is, what do you mean? V'haltoni chatos. We learn in a braisa that when the posit calls the Parah Adumah chatos, it's obviously not a real chatos. But it's like a chatos in the sense, Malamach Merlin Bah. From there we learn that's where Bechlah, where we learn that Me'ila applies to the Parah Adumah. But since it says, but it says chatos he, and the he is a mute, so the Me'ila only applies to the living Parah Adumah, but not to the ashes of it. So we see that Daraisa Me'ila doesn't apply to the ashes. So why did the Chachamim have to make a takana to that effect? So the answer is Amar Abba, but Rishona Hoy Mishtachakinba, because originally people would play around with it. They wouldn't just use it for the purposes of sprinkling Parah Adumah water. They would actually use it, for example, the Gemara mentions in other places that ashes on a wound help heal it. So they would actually take some of the ashes and apply it to wounds and do different kinds of things like that. So they made a gzera that Me'ila should apply to it in order to get people to stop doing that. Kivinsh Nigduru, once they saw that people have in fact been held back and people aren't doing that anymore, then Gozer Shaloyim Alaba, then they said the Takana of our Mishnah is not really a new Takana, it's really just restoring things to the way they were on a Daraisa level. Korban Eidah explains differently. He says, based on the Bavli discusses this, the Bavli discusses this in Menachos, where you have a whole sugya explaining our Mishnah, all the Takonis in our Mishnah, and it mentions over there that what it means is that what happened was, once the Chachamim made a Gzeda of the Elah on the ashes of the Parah Adumah, so now people started getting concerned. If I'm Suffolk Tomei, should I get sprinkled with Parah Adumah water? Maybe not. After all, it's only a Suffolk. I might not be Tomei, and then I'm using the ashes improperly. So they stopped going for Parah Adumah at all, if there's a suffix. So the Chum realized that's a problem, because we need people who are suffix tummy to be sprinkled, so then they put it back to the way it was before. Okay, so we'll take our chances. We may have some people misuse the ashes, but at least this way people won't be afraid to be sprinkled with Parah Adumah water when they're only suffix tummy. The last thing in the Mishnah we had said, Valakinin Chula, we said that there was a takana, a tnai based in, that if a person, we said earlier in the parak, that if a person brought, that there was a box of a pushka in the Beis Mikdash labeled kinim, where we said, according to the Chachamim anyway, that was meant for if a person has to bring a chatas, birds that are a chatas and an oila, for example, a woman who gave birth, or a zava, etc. So then they would put money in that box. And they could depend on the Beis Din Shel Koyanim that they would take care of dispersing all the money before the end of the day and make sure that the korbanos are being brought. So now we said in the Mishnah, what happens if in fact you have birds that became puzzle? Let's say they flew away. Let's say the Koyan did them with the wrong intention. Let's say let's say we had in the beginning of the parak the case where money fell out of one of the boxes and you don't know which box it fell out of. So then we said that there was a takana, there was a tnai based in that the tzibur supplies from the lishka, from the trumas halishka, supplies money for new birds. And then we had Rav Yossi saying that no, it's the person who supplies the birds in the first place, the vendor from whom they buy the birds, is responsible for providing, for making up for any ones that are possible or lost or what have you. Again, like we had previously, like we had earlier in the Masechta, let's say when a person sells flour to the Beis Mikdash, if the flour becomes wormy, then he has to make good on the loss. And we said because, either the very fact that he's selling to the Beis Mikdash itself has enough prestige that he's willing to take that occasional loss, or because he's anyway doing such a high volume business with the Beis Mikdash that we can expect him to cover the losses for these occasional kinds of things. Anyway, so the you want to mention something which was mentioned before that we have to ask. So at the beginning of the parak, we had a case where you found money on the ground between the box labeled kinim, between the box labeled kinim and the box labeled goizle oila, where goizle oila are birds that are brought completely for oilas. So we said if it's closer, so not closer. We said if it's exactly in the middle, then it goes to Goizle Oila, because then we have a Suffolk. Suffolk Daraisa Lachumra, therefore it has to be go to the Goizle Oila, which are more Chomor because they're brought completely as Oilas. So the Gemara asks, and the Gemara repeats over here, Ha'isha Azois Bamahi Miskaperas. So how is, after all, this woman who brought money and put it in the box labeled Kinim, she expected that the Beis Din Shel Koyanim is going to do their job and make sure that the Korban is brought on her behalf. So therefore, she's already allowed to eat Kodshim that evening once she has Hair of Shemesh without having to worry that maybe the korban wasn't brought because she can depend on the Beis Din Shel Koyanim. But now if we say that money dropped out of that box and we end up misafik putting it in the goizle oila box, so after all, how does she have her kapara? So the one answer is like it did over there. Omra b'yitzchak, t'nai Beis Din Hu. It is, after all, a t'nai Beis Din. Hamasapik is a kinin. The vendor that supplies the birds in the first place, whom is Sapikas Apsulis Vesa Oivdis, he's the same one who supplies the one to make up the replacement ones for the ones that became possible, and Vesa Oivdis, and the ones that became lost. So there you go, she will have her kapara accomplished no matter what. According to the Chachamim, it's not a problem either, because according to the Chachamim, we'll replace it from Trumas Alishka. The Gemara mentions this point, according to the Biasi, because in order to imply that the Halacha is like him, and in fact, the Rambam Pastin's like that it's the vendor who supplies the birds is responsible for supplying makeup ones, replacement ones for any ones that are lost at his expense. Hadron alach perak mois shenimzu. We're talking about in these last few Mishnayos about cases where you find something and there's a suffix on it. We had where you found money between one or another box of the boxes in the Beis Mikdash, where you found meat in the Azara or elsewhere in Yerushalayim, where you find an animal outside your shalayim and you have concerns that it may be, and there's reason to suspect that it might be an animal for a korban, what you do with it. So now we're continuing on the topic of things that you find with reference to the halachas of Tumah v'Tahara. Now, like this, min ha-Torah, a zov's spit, and when we say a zov, we mean any of the ones in that category, any of the people who are matami mishka v'moshav, so that includes a zov, a zova, a nida, all of that, your lettuce, all of them, their spit is an avatuma d'oraisa. The pasuk says it's in this parashas Tazria Mitzora. At the end of the parasha, the Torah tells us the dinim of the zav and the zava, and it says that if the zav spits on someone who's tahor, then that tahor person yichabes gadav v'rochatz b'mayim, he has to toivel his clothes and himself, meaning that the spit is an avatuma and it's matame the person and the clothes that he's wearing. Midrabanan, therefore, the Chachamim said that bit of goyim is considered that the chacham said that goyim are considered zavim on a derabanan level, and therefore their spit is also metamim derabanan. But the mission, but the rule is the rule is with a lot of these things of with a lot of these rules derabanan of tumah v'tahara, a number of them we don't apply in Yerushalayim. Because in Yerushalayim, since most people are eating karbanos there throughout the year, because after all, you have shlomim and bechor and other such karbanos that can be eaten anywhere in Yerushalayim, so most people in Yerushalayim are tahor to be able to eat kodshim. Therefore, the chachamim didn't find it necessary to apply these zeiros to Yerushalayim. So now, in this Mishnah, we're going to talk about when we do and when we don't. So halacha aleph, the Mishnah says, kol rukin and imtzarim b'Yerushalayim, all spit that we find anywhere in Yerushalayim, tahorin, is tahor, chutz mishal shuka elyon, with the exception of spit that we find in the upper marketplace of Yerushalayim. And we'll see in the Gemara why the upper marketplace is different. Divrei Rav Meir, that's what Rav Meir says. Rav Yosi says it's not so simple. Even in Yerushalayim, we have to make a gzera, because after all, there can be zavim, there can be other kinds of tmeim. So what we do is, Rabbi Yossi says, v'sh'ar kol yemos hashana, throughout the rest of the year, sheba emsa tmeim, the spit in the middle of the road. Now, it wasn't like nowadays, where the middle of the road is used by cars and whatever, and only the sidewalks are used by people. In those times, people would walk throughout the Rishus Rabim, but I mean, you also had horses and carts and whatever would also go through the middle. So obviously, you have to be very careful. But the point is that throughout most of the year, there's more. It's more common that there are tamei people even in Yerushalayim. Therefore, any spit you find in the middle of the road, which is where most people walk, is going to be tamei because they may have come from zavim or other tameim. Shabbat zdadin tahorin. Only if you find spit on the sides of the street, then it would be tahor because since most of the year, tahorim, so most of the year, it's not necessarily that you have fewer tahorim numerically, but the tahorim throughout the year are always careful to stay away from the tmeim. Therefore, they walk specifically on the sides of the street. So any spit that you find there, you have a chazaka that came from them, and therefore it's tahor. But anyone that you find in the middle, the chazaka is came from the people who are walking down the middle of the street, and many of them are tahor. Or v'shasa regal, only Rabbi Yossi continues, when it comes during Yom Tov, during the Shalosh Regalim, then it's the other way around. Shabbat Emsa Tahorin, the ones in the middle are Tahor, Shabbat Zadin Tmein, the ones by the sides are Tomei, Mipnei Shama Utin, Mitzdalkin, Zadin. Because during Yom Tov, since Chayev Adam Latahar Asme Beregel, therefore during Yom Tov, you have very few Tmei, and you have the occasional Tomei person who wasn't able to become Tahor before Yom Tov. Let's say you have a person who's still an active Zav, or let's say he's doing his Shiva Nakim or whatever, fine, he can't help it. But you have very few of them, so therefore they stay to the sides, therefore there's much more reason to assume during Yom Tov that only the spit on the sides is Tomei, comes from these Zavim or whatever, whereas in the middle is comes from the majority who are Tahorim. The Mishnah continues. The Gemara actually asks. We learned about this in we learned something about this in Psachim, but actually the situation that we learned about in Psachim was actually about the next part. It is about the next part of the Mishnah about Kalim. So let's talk about that, and then we'll talk about what we learned in Psachim about it. So actually, the Gemara does mention over there that what it means is that even if we have a chazaka, that there's a zav in town, we see, according to the Tanna Kamma, we see that a zav was walking down the street. Nevertheless, Rav Meir is telling us you don't have to worry that the spit that now you find later on is from him, and therefore is tamei, because according to Rav Meir, Bechlal will not gozer on spit in Yerushalayim, except for in Shuka Elyon, because as the Gemara is going to mention, there were a lot of goyim over there. Next, the Mishnah continues. Kol kalim and imtzoyim yeshalayim derech yirida leveis hatavila. Any kalim. Now we also have the in general the Chachamim made a gzera about any kalim that you find that they may be tamei b'safik. But again, in Yerushalayim they were not gozer on that. But when are they gozer? Kol kalim and imtzoyim yeshalayim derech yirida leveis hatavila. If you find them on the way going down to the Beis HaTevila, which means, in other words, the Mefarshim explained that there were two different, and based on that Gemara and Pesachim, that there were two ways for each mikveh, they would have two ways of going down to it. They would have a path that would lead to it that was meant for people who are Tomei or for Kalim who are Tomei. And then there was another path for people on Kalim that are Tahor, with the idea being, of course, that this way they don't accidentally touch each other. So if you find Kalim even in Yerushalayim, but you find that on the way down to the place of Tevila, Tmeim, then they're Tomei because we have to assume that the person dropped it on his way to Tevila. V'derech aliyah tahorin, but if you find it on the way up from the mikveh, then it's tahor. Shaloi kiridasin aliyasin, because the way they take them down is not the same way, is not the same path that they use to take them back up. Divrei Rav Meir, that's what Rav Meir says. There's a different explanation that Rambam brings and some of the Mefoshim follow as well, that derech aliyah and derech yirida doesn't only mean the path itself, it also means the position of the keli. Because if you think about it, for example, after you've toiled the keli, you're going to put it in such a way, you're going to put it, let's say it was a cup, you're going to put it upside down so the water will drip out of it. As opposed to before you toiled it, you'd have no reason to put it like that, so therefore you can tell not only based on where the keli is, but also the position of it. Okay, that's according to Rav Meir. Rav Yossi Omer Kulan Tahorin. Here Rav Yossi is more, Mekel, unlike in the Reisha where he was more Machmir. But here he says that Kulan Tahorin, no, even if you find them, so here on Rav Meir actually is where the Gemara asks in Psachim that Rav Meir seems to be contradicting himself a little bit. First he says that only if you find them Derech Yerida are they Tomei, implying if you find them anywhere else in Yerushalayim, then they're Tahor. But then he continues Derech Aliyah Tahor, and only if you find them on the way coming up from the Mikvah are they Tahor. So what if you find them elsewhere in Yerushalayim, which is not Derech Aliyah, what is not Derech Yerida, what would Rav Meir say on that? So the Gemara answers over there in Psachim, the Bavli explains in Psachim that what it means is that you have these little side streets that are near the Derech Yerida and near the Derech Aliyah. So those it's Tomei Misafik, because after all the Keli has a Chazaka to begin with of having been Tomei. If we find it anywhere else in Yerushalayim, then we say it's Tahor. But if we say if it's on the way down to the Mikveh, or if it's in these alleyways that are used for both Yerida and Aliyah, then it would be Tomei Misafek, according to the mayor. Rabbi Yossi Omer Kulan Tahor, and Rabbi Yossi says, no, anything is Tahor. They did not make a Zera about Safek Kalim in Yerushalayim at all. Chutz min asalva amagrefa v'amiritza amirchadon l'kvaris, with the exception of Kalim that are specifically used by grave diggers or by people involved with burying, namely a basket that they would use to collect the bones to take them from one place to another, and a magrefa, which is like a rake that they would use to gather up the bones, and a meritza, which we'll see in the Gemara what a meritza is. So those, the hamirchod and lekvaris, those are designated for using with kvarim. So therefore, so those have more of a chazaka of tumah than any other kind, and unless you know that he toiled them, then you can't assume that they were tahor. But Rav Yossi says, any other kalim that you find anywhere in Yerushalayim, even if it was derech yirida, even if it was on the way down to the mikveh, then you still, because it's in Yerushalayim, you don't have to be gozer on it, and you can assume that it's tahor. Okay, the Mishnah continues. Sakin shenimtzis b'yudalid, continuing on this topic of finding kalim in Yerushalayim, if you find the knife that you could use for shchita on the 14th of Nisan, so now you have to think about it. If the person who lost it, the pashtus, now obviously we're talking about if there's a siman on it, there's nothing to talk about you using it. But if there's no siman on it, so that you're allowed to keep it, so now if you found it on the 14th of Nisan, obviously the person who owned it is going to have toiled it no later than yesterday, the 13th of Nisan, because it needs head of shemesh in order to be able to use it for shechting. Therefore, you have every right to assume that he already did it. Therefore, you're allowed to right away go and shechti korban pesach with it, because you have strong reason to assume that the person did actually tovel it in order to be able to use it. Shecht is korban pesach. But b'shloisha also, but if you find it on the 13th, shone umatbil, then you do need to tovel it again, because you don't know. Maybe the person was planning to tovel it later in the day, and he hasn't tovel it yet. In fact, the Rambam has an explanation of Shoneh, meaning that he also needs to get it sprinkled with Parah Aduma water in case today was the seventh day, and therefore it needs to be sprinkled with Parah Aduma water and then choked. Koifitz, on the other hand, if a person finds not a regular knife, but a cleaver, which is an extra large knife that you use for breaking bones, now, you can't use that for the Korban Pesach, because you're not allowed to break bones in the Korban Pesach, as we learned in Masechta Pesachim. Therefore, Bezeh Ovezeh, Shoneh Umatbil, Either way, whether he finds it on the 13th of Nisan or on the 14th, he's going to have to toivel it again, because there's no reason to assume that the owner would have been careful to toivel it already. The first he's going to need it is when he brings a chagiga on Yom Tov, a chagiga's chamisha, so the regular korban chagiga that you bring every Yom Tov, that you're allowed to break bones in. So that he would, want to make sure that his koifetz is ready to be able to use for that by the morning of the 15th, because that's the earliest you can bring the chagiga's chamisha also. Fine, so he would toivel on the 14th, and it would have a head of shemesh on the night of on the Seder night. So therefore, when you find it on Erev Pesach, there's no reason to assume that he already toveled it. We had a sugya in Pesachim discussing this, where we had the opinion of Ben Tema, the Pashtus of Yehuda Ben Tema of Mishnah of Pirkei Avos, but maybe not. Anyway, where he said that the dinim of the we said over there that in certain things he holds that you also have, we discussed in Pesachim, we learned about besides the Chagigas Hamisha also, which you have every one of the Shalosh Regalim, you also have Chagigas Abba, so special to Pesach, which is a Korban Chagiga that they would bring on Erev Pesach in order to be able to eat the Korban Pesach, in order that they eat it first, and then they eat the Korban Pesach al hasoiva. Nowadays, we commemorate that by having the Zroya and the Beitza on the Seder plate, the Beitza corresponding to the Chagiga. So the Gemara discusses over there that according to Ben Tema, the Chagigas Abba Aser has certain rules like the Korban Pesach itself. He says, for example, that it can only be eaten for Yom, it can only be eaten on that night, just like the Korban Pesach. And the Gemara discussed over there the question, what about, according to Ben Tema, does it have other rules, like the Korban Pesach? For example, would you be allowed to break bones in it? So first, so the Gemara brought on Mishnah, and said, on the face of it, on Mishnah must be like Ben Tema, and it must be that he holds that you can't break bones in Chagigas Habal also either, and that would explain, again, why you can't assume the Kofitz was toivled, because if that you were allowed to break bones in the Chagigas Habal also, like a Chachamim say, then we should assume the Koifetz also he toveled no later than the 13th, because he's going to need it the 14th by night to be able to break bones of his Chagigas Habal also. So therefore, so that would show that our Mishnah is like Ben Tema, and it would show that in fact, according to Ben Tema, you're not allowed to break bones in it. On the other hand, the Gemara says not necessarily. You could make our Mishnah work according to the Chachamim as well, because the Gemara draws out a scenario over there where the Nasi is very, very sick on the 13th, and there's reason to assume he's not going to make it. So now, when it comes, everybody's going to become Tommy when they go to his funeral, of course. He's a Nasi, they have to. So therefore, a person is likely to figure, the Korban Pesach, I'm going to tovel my knife anyway, because it's one suffix. Is the Nasi going to die or not? And if the Nasi, either way, I'm going to be bringing a Korban Pesach, but I'll be bringing it Betruma if he dies, and Betahara otherwise. Therefore, I might as well tovel my knife to be on the safe side. But the Chagigas Habal also, not only is it not going to be brought if the Nasi dies, because you don't bring a Chagiga when the Pesach is brought Betruma, but even anyway, there are cases, even when the Pesach has brought Betara, where you don't bring a Chagigas Habas anyway. For example, if you have very few people registered for your Korban Pesach, and therefore each one gets a large amount of Korban Pesach meat. So therefore, the guy figures that now I have a Svek Sveka, is there B'chalal going to be a Chagiga? Therefore, he's not going to bother Chagigas Habas, therefore he's not going to bother toveling his Kofitz. So even according to the Chachamim, that would be the scenario of our Mishnah, where you find a Kofitz. It wouldn't be on a regular Yud Gimel or Yud Daladness, and then it would be on that, it would be specifically in that case where the Nasi was Gosis, where he was deathly ill on the 13th of Nisan.
But don't need it for the Korban Pesach itself?
The Kofitz is you use it to break bones. Can't break bones in the Korban Pesach.
Okay.
Continues the Mishnah. Chal Abba also Lias B'Shabbos. Now if the 14th of Nisan comes out on Erev Shabbos, then sheichet b'miyad, then you're allowed to then you're allowed to shecht with it right away, because obviously the person who needed to tovel it would have had, since you're not allowed to tovel kelim on Shabbos midrabanan, therefore obviously the person will have tovel the knife on Friday. So therefore, even if the nasi is goisus, and even if you have the whole scenario over there, nevertheless you can still shecht with it, because obviously he must have tovel it before Shabbos. In fact, the Korban Eder brings an explanation that says that it would mean, in this case, when Erev Pesach comes out on Shabbos, means you could even use the Kofitz to shech. Even the Kofitz in that case, you can assume, was tovel. It's true there's no Chagiga on Shabbos, but necessarily he will have had to tovel it before Shabbos in order to use it for his regular Korban Chagiga, which is brought on Yom Tov, because again, he can't tovel it on Shabbos, Erev Pesach. He can't tovel it the first day of Yom Tov, same reason. So necessarily, he will have had to tovel it before Shabbos. Okay. also betesvav, continues the Mishnah, if he finds the knife on the 15th, also he can check with it right away, because obviously the same thing. He can't have had it sprinkled with paradromal water or toiveled it on, he can't have been expecting that later that day on the 15th, which is the first day of Yom Tov, he's going to be sprinkling or toiveling it, because he can't do those on Yom Tov. So therefore the person who found it, again, if there's no simon and he doesn't have to return it, is allowed to use it right away to shech. And the Mishnah finishes off, nimtzak shurla sakin. If you find a kofetz tied to a knife, harehi kasakin, then it has the din of the knife, meaning since you found the knife on the 14th, and we said the knife you can assume already was tovel, because the person knows he's going to need it to shech his korban pesach, then therefore, since you find the kofetz tied together with it, then you're allowed to also use it right away, and you don't have to worry that it wasn't tovel. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Now, we said in the first part of the Mishnah that in the Shuk HaElyon, in the upper market of Yerushalayim, according to the mayor, any spit that you find there is Tameh. Now, why is that? Rab Oven, B'Shem, Rab Shoban Levi, Katzron, Zoven, Shal Nachrim, Hoyasham, there was a Goyish laundry in that part of Yerushalayim. So you had a lot of Goyim over there, and as we said, Goyim are considered Zovim, Dirabanan, and their spit is Tameh, Dirabanan. There is a different possibility, actually. The word castrian, there's a Latin word castra, which means an army camp. So it could be also that our castran of the Gemara may also mean that. It may be a variant of the word castra, meaning an army camp. So it means there was an army camp of Goyim, of the Romans. And again, the idea would be that they're Goyim, and therefore their spit is Tomei Drabban. The Gemara continues, in this connection, Amar of Chanina, Aroides HaYunoichin Yerushalayim, these Goyim who had their laundry or their army camp or whatever in Yerushalayim, they used to stab wild donkeys over there. They would use them to feed the royal lions, or maybe they would use them, the Romans were very big on sports and things that involved killing animals in the arenas or whatever, so they were doing that. So there's a lot of blood coming out. Now, when people are being oiler regal to Yerushalayim, they're wallowing through this blood all the way up to their knees, because there's so much blood in the streets that people have no choice. If they're walking down the street, they're ending up walking in that blood. They came to ask the Chachamim, are they tamei? And the Chachamim didn't say anything to them. In other words, there's no problem, because the blood of these aroides is not metame. So now the Gemara gets into a discussion about the tumah of the, about whether the blood of an avela is matame or not. Based on this, we actually had this whole sugya previously on Daf Tes. Now the Gemara is repeating it again. One of the big differences between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi is the Bavli went through a lot more editing, so therefore you'll often have, the Gemara is not going to just bring another, the Bavli is often not going to bring the same sugya again in the same Masechta and rely on the fact that it was already put before, whereas the Yerushalmi that went through much less editing is just going to repeat these things again and again. So first of all, Rav Shimon Abba B'Shem Rav Chanina Katzron Shal Nochem Hayosham. Okay, fine. That was the same thing as we said before. Rav Shimon B'Shem Rav Shurban Levi. Mice appeared to Michelle B'Shrebi Shemesa. It happened once that a mule, which is also a behemoth mayor, that a mule from the household of Rebbe died, and blood came out of it. The tiru astameh mishum nevela, the chachamim of that time said that the blood of it is not is tahar. There's no problem of nevela. There's no problem of trumas nevela with that blood. So the Gemara continues. Rabbi Lazar Shalder of Simon. So Rabbi Lazar of the next generation asked Rabbi Simon, ad kama, up to what, Rabbi Shurban Levi is saying that they were mataharit, up to what point? Do we mean no matter how much blood there was, it's tahor because the blood of an avela is not matame? Or do you just mean that there was a small amount of it, less than an avias, and therefore it's not matame? So he asked Rabbi Simon that question, v'loy agive. Rabbi Simon did not answer him back. Shorla, Rabbi Shurban Levi, so he went to ask, Rabbi Lazar went to ask Rabbi Shurban Levi personally, Omalei ad revius tahor yosim mikan tami. Rabbi Shurban Levi tells him that no, they were only the tahor up to a revius of it, not more than that. Which means, in other words, obviously that's disagreeing with what we just said before about the people wallowing through the blood over there up to their knees, because obviously there you have a lot more, than a revius, and they were still matahor. So here we have, he was saying that when in Rebbe's household, when this came up, then they were the opinion that said that the opinion, as the Gemara is going to say later, it was Rebbe Yehuda, said that it's only tahor up to a revius. More than that, it would be matame. Rabbi Lazar was upset why Rabbi Simon didn't answer him himself, because after all, Rabbi Simon was a Talmud of Rabbi Shurban Levi. He could have answered him that himself. Why did he not answer him and make him have to go to Rabbi Shurban Levi? Okay, more on this topic. The Gemara says, Rabbi have a Yosef Masni Hodin Ovda. Rabbi one time was sitting and telling over this story about the mule that died. And you have the same question. Amalei Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Bisna Ad Kama. Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Bisna asked him the same question. Are we saying that it's Tahor no matter how much blood there is? Or are we saying it's Tahor only if there's up to a Revius? And he's asking, is it that it's only up to Revius is Tahor and more than that is Tomei, or would it be that it's Tahor even if it's more than that? Rabbi, instead of answering, he bought in him. We learned this before. The word bought literally means kicked. It doesn't necessarily have to mean that he physically kicked him, but just like he disrespected him and wouldn't answer him. Right? Like he turned away from him or whatever, and I don't want to have anything to do with this. Omelet of Zrika, so Rabbi Zrika later on asked Rabbi, begin to have a shoyloch at boit bay. Why are you disrespecting him just because he's asking you a question? Amalei, and Rabbi answers, it's not because the question was a bad one, it's because I was in a distracted state, begin to like have a daiti be, because I didn't have my full das, I wasn't able to think straight. And we know, and why am I not able to think straight? Because, as the Gemara is going to continue, he was worried about his food supply. The Amr Rav Chanin, Rav Chanin says, you have a pasuk in the Teuchecha that says, V'hoyu chayecha tluim l'cha mineged. Your life will be hanging in the balance in front of your eyes. So that means zeshu lekeach lechitin l'shana. That refers to a person who doesn't have any land of their own to grow grain or vegetables or anything they need to live off of. So they have to go and buy grain for a year at a time in the marketplace. So then his life is hanging in the balance, because if one year there's a bad crop and there's not enough to sell, then he's going to go hungry. And then the pasuk continues even worse. For chad the lila v'yomim, you'll be afraid by night and by day. So this means zeshu l'keach minas sidki. That refers to somebody who buys from a wholesaler, where he buys for like a week at a time or something. So he's even more concerned because or sidki can even mean he buys on a daily basis. Whatever it is, the point is again he's even running more of a risk, because one day or one week that things are bad, then he may not be able to buy. And when the pasuk finishes off, like Simon b'chayecha, you won't even be able to trust your own life. Zeshu l'keach min apalter. That means a person who's even worse off. He doesn't even have the ability to make bread for himself, to grind up the wheat and bake the bread himself. He has to buy it ready-made from the baker, and of course the baker is even more likely to go out of business or to raise his prices or whatever. And Rabbi says, "V'ano samach apaltira." So I'm in that last situation. I'm depending on a palter. I don't have the ability to make my own bread. I have to rely on the baker to supply it to me. Therefore, I'm in a very distracted mood, and therefore, when Rabbi Yitzchak Babisna came with the question, I wasn't able to answer him with a clear mind. So we talked about, when we learned this on that test, a couple of possibilities. Maybe one explanation, which I think the Shvus Yaakov says, is that he also means in a deeper sense. He means, in other words, I'm not the one who originated this teaching. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is the one who first taught it in the Bais Medrash. Therefore, I'm like relying on the baker. I'm like relying on a secondary source. So it's not really clear to me to be able to answer the question. Better, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Bisna should be going to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and asking him himself. That's one possibility. Well, Bechlal, also we talked about them in the Gemara mentions in Soita that if a person says, I have food today, but what if I don't have food tomorrow? And then he's Mektane Amunah. He has a lesser level of Amunah. So the Bivi is saying, I'm worried, I'm concerned about the fact that I don't have that high level of Amunah yet, and therefore I'm not really in a position to be able to teach Torah at this point. Okay. So the Gemara says, my kedun, what's the bottom line? What is the din as far as this dam nevelis? Is it metame when you have more than a revius of it or not? Or a revius or more or not. We learned, by the way, when we first learned this on Daf Test, the reason why it came in is because Gemara said over there that when a revius of blood congeals, it becomes a kazayas in size. So since a kazayas of nevela is metame, then maybe we would say that blood of a nevela or revius is metame as well. But maybe not. So the Gemara says, the Gemara brings from a Mishnah in Adius, Heyed Rabbi Shur ben Psoda al dam nevela shur tahor. We see that Rabbi Shur ben Psoda says Adius about blood of nevela that it's tahor. So there you go. Tahor means completely tahor, even more than a revius. The Gemara says not necessarily. Ma'u tohu tohu melahachshu. No, because it could just mean tohu in the sense it's not machshu lekabel tumah. One of the shivas hamashkim, one of the seven liquids that's able to be machshu lekabel tumah, is indeed blood. But not necessarily blood that came out of a nevela that was stabbed or that died naturally or whatever. It could only mean blood of shchita or whatever. So therefore, so it would mean it's not machshu. But maybe it is in fact matame. Holy Thomas matame, implying, in other words, that to be matame, maybe it could be matame. But the Gemara says that doesn't work because tamon tanenon. We learn in a Mishnah in Machshirin, dam asheretz matame kibsorei. The blood of a sheretz is matame. Just like the flesh of it, mitame ve'enim machshir. Now, just like the flesh, it's only able to transmit tumah to something else. It's not able to be machshir lekabel tumah. Ve'en lanu kayotz tibay. We have nothing else like it. So, on the face of it, the Mishnah is saying that that's the only example of some of blood which is mitame and not machshir. So then, in that case, that would mean that blood of nevela is either one or the other. If it's mitame, then it's also machshir. If it's not machshir, then it's not mitame either. If you're telling me that Rabbi Yeshua ben Pesoda means that it's not machshir, then it would mean it can't be mitame either, and that would answer the question. The Gemara says no. The ein lanu kayotz kashir tumase, not necessarily. When the Mishnah says there's nothing else like the blood or the flesh of a sheretz, maybe it only means as far as the shear of the tumah. Because a sheretz is unique among all kinds of tumas that a kadosha, a lentil-sized piece of it, is enough to be metame. So therefore, the Mishnah would be saying that the blood is of it is also metame when you have a lentil-sized amount of it. That doesn't necessarily show that doesn't necessarily show when it comes to blood of a nevela, where the shear is larger, it would be a revius, that in fact that a revius should not be metame, not necessarily. Aval domi metame kivsare, but maybe you could still say that the blood of a nevela is metame just like the flesh of it. So there's no solid proof from that Mishnah in Adius that the blood is not metame. Well, Amar Rabbi Yosi, Pligibot Trein Amaroyim. So Rabbi Yosi says, actually, you should know that two Amaroyim argue about that, Chad Amatame v'Chad Amatar. One says that, yes, the revius or more blood of a nevela is going to be Tame. And the other one, so according to that, then, obviously, the Oile Regal and Yerushalayim would have had a problem because of all of this blood that they're wading through. They would, in fact, be Tame. Whereas the other opinion says Tahar, and he says that there would have been no problem with them. Manda Amatame to Rabbi Yehuda, the one who says it's Tame would be like Rabbi Yehuda. Now, where do we see Rabbi Yehuda saying about this is, there's also a Mishnah in Adius. Now, you have in Adius, it mentions over there various cases. In Adius, it goes through certain machloikasin of Vishama and Vesil. It doesn't go through all of them, obviously. There are hundreds of them. But it goes through the ones that have some unusual feature about them. For example, ones where Vishama is Mako and Vesil is Machmer. And you have, in Adius over there, you have various Tanoim that have their own lists of cases where Vesil is Machmer and Vishama is Mako. Where, in other words, they say, and therefore, of course, the halach has to be like Vesil. One of them is Rabbi Yehuda says over there that Dam Nevelus is a Machloikus, Vishama and Vesilil, Vishama is Matahar and Vesilil is Matame. So it comes out, in other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Dam Nevelus is in fact Matame. So the Amora who says that Dam Nevelus is Matame would be according to Rabbi Yehuda. And Manda Amator, Rabbi Yehuda ben Pesoda, the one who says it's Tahar would be according to the simple understanding of Rabbi Yehuda ben Pesoda, not like we said before. Or that maybe even Rabbi Shoban Psoda is only talking about being mash with a Kabbal Tumah. No, now we're going to assume, this Amorah at least assumes that Rabbi Shoban Psoda means that at face value, Dam Nevelus is Tahor regardless of the amount. Amalei Rabbi Avdumah Demin Nechusa, V'yos. So Rabbi Avdumah Demin Nechusa tells Rabbi Yosi, V'yos, that's correct. We can demonstrate that Rabbi Yehuda is the one who holds that Dam Nevelus is Tomei. The Rabbi Yehuda Merainu de Ben Nesiyahava, because Rabbi Yehuda was the Poisik in the family of the Nesiyim. Meaning, if we said that there was a mule of Beis Rebbe that died, and we're talking about what happens with the blood of it, Beis Rebbe, so Rabbi Yehuda was the house Rav for Beis Rebbe, and therefore, if we're saying that he declared it Tomei, it can't mean that he was matarit completely, because we see that Rabbi Yehuda holds that Basilo holds that it's Tomei. It must mean that he was matarit only because there was less than a revius of it, which is like Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said at the top of the Amud. So there you go. Indeed, there is a machloikas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Pesoda on it whether Dam Nevelus is matame at all. We said in the Mishnah, Kolod Rukin Mechula, we said in the Mishnah, all spit that you find in your Shalayim is Tahor, except for Shuka Elyon. So the question is, Loi Kein Amar Rabba Bohu B'Shem Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina Loi Gozer Al Arukin Shebi Yishlayim? Didn't Rabba Bohu tell us in the name of Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina that the Chacham were not Gozer on spit that you find in Yishlayim because most of the people there are Tahar? And the answer is, like we said, on the top of the Yomur, Ha'it Ma'alei Rabba Oven B'Shem Rabbi Shabban Levi Katsum and Tomnachar Ma'ayisham, the Goyim had their laundry or their army camp or whatever over there. And therefore, there were a lot of goyim over there. Tiklan Chavetin explains why we're repeating that, because the Makshin, who's asking the question over here in the Gemara, did not hear what we said at the beginning of the discussion, so therefore he asked the question. And so the answer is the same answer. Then we said in the Mishnah, according to Rabbi Yosi, the Sh'ar Yomos HaShana Tmein Mahal, so we said, according to Rabbi Yosi, the vort is that during most of the year, spit that you find in the middle of the street in Yerushalayim is Tomei, because there may be Tmeim over there. Only what you find on the sides is Tahor, and during the regal it's the other way around. So a Braisa expands on that. B'shayim Mos Hashana, Atmeim Mahalchim Shibolas. During the rest of the year, the Tmeim walk Shibolas. Shibolas literally means the flow of a river. So in this case, it means the flow of traffic. So the Tmeim are walking with the flow of traffic. B'atahorim Mahalchim Natsad. The Tahorim walk on the side in order to keep away. B'atahorim Mahalchim Stam. So the Tehorim are walking over there on the side, Batmeim, Omer Lam Proshu, and the Tmeim would warn them, stay away from us, we are Tomei. So therefore, the spit that you find on the sides is Tahor, because that's where the Tehorim walk, whereas the spit you find in the middle is Tomei. The Shasa Regal, but during the Yom Tov, it's the other way around, a Tahorim Mahal Shibolas, because most people are Tahor, therefore the Tahorim walk with the flow of traffic, but Atmeyim Mahalchim Natsad, the Tmeim are the ones who walk on the side, Atmeyim Mahalchim Stam, the Tmeim just walk over there, but Tahorim, Omulam Proshu, and the Tahorim tell them, stay away, because you're going to make us Tomei. So therefore, in that time of year, the spit on the sides is Tomei, because it may have come from the Tmeim, and the spit in the middle is Tahor. Okay, then we had in the Mishnah, we talked about the Chola Kalim and Imtsoyim Chola. We said all Kalim that you find in Yerushalayim. So we had said, according to the mayor, if you find them on the way down to the mikveh, or in the position indicating that they're on their way down to the mikveh, then they're Tomei. Otherwise, they're Tahor. So again, the question is, Loi Kein Omer Abba Bohu B'Shem Rabbi Yechanon, Loi Gozer Ala Kalim Shirushalayim. Didn't we say that the Chacham didn't make the Gzera about found Kalim to apply in Yerushalayim? So why over here are we saying these Kalim are Tomei? So the answer is, yes, but in this case, since we find them on the way down to the Beis HaTevilah, so now it becomes that shows that seems to demonstrate that it's like you have a stronger chazakah that in fact they are Tomei, because otherwise what are they doing on the way down to the mikveh, or in the position like they would be going down to the mikveh. So even though it's in Yerushalayim, we have to be gozer that they're Tomei misaf. We said in the Mishnah that there were three kinds of kalim that Rabbi Yossi said always have a chazaka of tumah, but any other keli that you find in Yerushalayim, even if it's on the way down to the Beis HaTevilah, is assumed to be tahor. And we said they were a basket, a magrefa, which is a rake, and the third one was a meritza. So what is a meritza? So first of all, the Gemara says, Abashol ha-yakoda osin sipodin. Abashol called that third keli a sipodin. Abashol, the Gemara actually mentions in Nida that Abashol was for a period of time, he was a koiva mason. He was a member of a chevra kadisha, and he used to bury mason. So he knew this stuff. So why did he call it Tzipporin? Manda Amat Tzipporin, the Abashol who calls this Kaili Tzipporin, Shoyadomel Tzipporin. The reason is because it resembles a fingernail because it's got a sharp edge. Manda Amat Meritza, the Tanakama, the Tana of our Mishnah, who calls it Meritza, is Shemeritza to Evan Leves HaKvaris, because the word Meritza means to crush. Like the Shodesh Rotzat means to crush. So you use it to when you're digging a grave. If you find a stone in the middle, then you use this keli. You use like a pick to crush the stone to get it out of the way. There is a different girsa. The Rambam has a girsa which Tiklan Chazetin brings over here. Not meritza to even, but rather meritza to etzem. You use it to break up bones. Namely, what they had is in those times they had the common thing was they would bury a mess for a period of time in one place until the flesh decays. Then they would gather up the bones and bring them to a different place and bury them permanently over there inside a keli, a stone keli. It's called in English an ossuary. They found different ones in archaeological digs around Eretz Yisrael. So according to that, the vote would be if the bones don't fit inside the ossuary, then they would use this meritza to crush them. Although the Rambam writes that, although the Pharisee Stroll says, I mean, how can you do such a thing? Since when do you have permission to be mavaza a mess ad kidekach? So he prefers the girsa that like we say in the Gemara over here, Meritza the Evan, that use it to crush stones that are in the way when you're trying to dig the grave. Okay, whatever the case, those kalim are used with gvarim all the time, therefore they have a chazaka of being tamei, but Rabbi Yossi says any other kalim that you find in Yerushalayim have a chazaka of being tamei. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, koifetz chola, we have the case of a cleaver in the Mishnah, which is used to break bones, where we said there's a distinction that where we said that unlike a knife, where if you find it on Erev Pesach, you can check with it, the koifetz, you have to first tovel it, because the person may not have toveled it in time, etc., and the Mishnah had finished off, that if you find it tied to a knife, then it's like a knife. So Tony Hasak and Shur Allah, HaRezu Kamosa, we learn in a Braisa, if the knife is tied to it, then it is like it. Now, what does that mean? Tikkun Chadatin explains that the Braisa is arguing with, and also Korban Eda says that the Braisa is arguing with the Mishnah. That the Mishnah had said that if the koifetz is tied to the knife, given that we have every reason to assume that the knife was toveled, because after all, it's needed in order to shech the Korban Pesach, then we can assume the koifetz was toveled as well. The Braisa is saying the other way around. Since we have good reason to assume that the koifetz was not toveled, then therefore, because after all, you can't use it for the Korban Pesach, then therefore there's good reason to assume that the knife wasn't toveled either. So the Mishnah would be make, or the Braisa would be machne. Then a second explanation, the Korban Eda brings a second explanation that no, the Braisa is explaining that if you have a koifetz tied to a knife, then fine, we can talk about. The Mishnah had said that since the knife was toveled, then so is the koifetz. What we mean is, on the other hand, what if you find two knives tied together and you know that one of those knives was toveled? Then you can assume that the second knife is toveled as well. You're not going to assume that somebody bundled together a tomei knife with a toho knife. And in fact, the Rambam learns like that in Pirush HaMishnayos, and also in Yad HaChazaka, the Rambam paskens that way, that's what it means, that if you find two knives tied together and one of them you know for a fact is toho, let's say you watch the guy toveling it, and now you find another knife with it, then you can assume the second one is toho as well. Okay.
Schreich.